So that's the whole point of storytelling. People will lean in. They want to know what actually happens in that moment. On today's Super You podcast, we go deep on becoming a better storyteller.
It's one small step for man.
Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
We choose to go to the moon, not because they are easy, but because they are
hard. I have a dream.
You can't handle the truth.
7.
6.
5.
4.
3.
2.
1.
Super
You. Welcome to today's Super You podcast. I am your host, Eric Qualman. A lot of you know me as Equal Man. It's an honor to have you listening here today. On the Super You podcast, we are all about unlocking and unleashing your inner superpower. And we're doing different things, different formats all the time. Sometimes we do 7 super tips from some of the world's greatest performers. Other times we're sitting down one-on-one with these top performers. Or today what we do is we do a mailbag. We just take one question and go very deep on that. And that's what we're going to do today. It's all about storytelling. So many are asking us about storytelling. Like a lot of things in life, storytelling is part art and part science. It's an ongoing process for me, both on stage in life and also writing books. So I am a lifelong learner when it comes to storytelling. I'm always learning from the greats. Two of the ones that I look to, one is looking down on us and one is living with us, is Paul Harvey. He used to tell the rest of the story, so go check out his stuff online. And then Mike Rowe, you probably know him from Dirty Jobs, but he has a couple podcasts that are doing quite well. And my favorite podcast that Mike Rowe does is That's the Way I Heard It. Since this is a top question for all you listeners out there when it comes to storytelling, and it's so important, it's becoming more and more important that all of us have our own personal brands and also become just a more interesting person if you can tell a story at that cocktail party or at that reception or at Thanksgiving, wherever it might be. So I'm going to unwrap this in two different ways, storytelling as a writer as well as storytelling if you're performing on stage. So let's start off with telling stories on stage. The first thing you want to do is get the audience in the same boat with you. What does that mean? It means that they probably have a story similar to the one that you are about to tell. So it's not the exact same story. It's not their story, but they can relate to it because they have a similar story. A great trick to get people in the same boat as you before you tell your story is to ask them a question. Now, I'm about to tell you a story. I use several different stories when I get on stage, but I'm going to tell you one of the ones I use a lot. And I'm going to use a question that I correlate with that to get the people in the same boat.
How many of you, when you fly, do you like to talk to the person next to you? I kind of fall in the middle. It depends on what kind of mood I'm in. But I started to talk to this guy, and I don't like to ask what you do within the first 30 minutes of the conversation. So about 30 minutes in, I go, well, what do you do for a living? He goes, I'm a musician. And the poor guy had no idea, had 3 cups of coffee. I go, you're a musician? Oh man, if you use social mobile, all this stuff out there, this is how you get your name out there. This is what Taylor Swift does. This is what Lady Gaga does with their little monsters. The Biebs, this is how you get out there and sell music. And fortunately for him, this nice lady comes up and she asked for an autograph, and I am pumped, right? Because no one ever recognizes an author on a plane. But I've been carrying around a Sharpie for 3 years just in case someone recognized me. So I was prepared for that moment, so I'm getting my Sharpie out. She doesn't want my autograph. She wants his autograph. She wants 5-time Grammy Award winning James Taylor's autograph. And I'm sitting there going, oh my gosh, 3 more hours till I get to LA? Was I just saying, James, if only you use social and mobile, maybe you'd have some success out there.
All right, so unpacking that, we talked about asking the question to get the audience on the same page. They've all talked to someone on the plane. They're leaning forward. You haven't given away the pull the rug moment. That's another thing about great storytelling. Is you want to pull the rug. That's one way to do it. There's different arcs, but one great way to storytell is to zig when they think there's a zag. So they have no idea that I'm sitting by James Taylor. till the very end, and that's when you get the big laugh. Also, you're setting up in the middle, because most of the time when you're introduced on stage, they've got this huge sizzle reel, this big highlight reel about you coming on stage. So it's basically saying that you can walk on water. So one reason I'm talking about that as well, that I've been carrying around a Sharpie for 3 years, is then I make myself more relatable to the audience and let them know, look, I don't think I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread. And that way, your audience is more likely to be engaged in your story as well. So that's a way to open if you're storytelling on stage. That's a good opener, and I call it the pull the rug. They don't know that James Taylor's sitting there till the very end, so it's a pull the rug story. Another great way to storytell, and this might be in the middle or the end of your presentation, is to have an arc to a story to where you reach a low point. So every story has an arc to it. There's a beginning, middle, and then you have the end. But towards the middle and towards the end, there's a low point of the story. Ultimate despair. If you think about Rocky, any Rocky movie, it's in the middle. He's not going to be able to do it. And then he kind of rises from the ashes. So here's a sample of a story that I tell on stage on what that arc might look like.
So I was up in Indianapolis and I was going to give a talk in the afternoon, but I was running in the morning and I saw that the NCAA headquarters was there. And I said, oh man, you are an idiot. How could you have not set up a meeting with the NCAA and set up a partnership with them, a partnership meeting? Because we have the book, What Happens in Vegas Stays on YouTube, but we also have the college version of that since so many universities were using it. We adjusted it to What Happens on Campus Stays on YouTube to include cyberbullying and sexual harassment. So I'm sitting there going, wow, this could have been really mission-based to help all these student athletes with their digital stamps. So I'm running and I go, you know what? Hashtag YOLO, you only live once. Let's step into discomfort. Let's just stop by and see if we can have a meeting. So I run up to the front doors, but it's weird, they have like a lot of security there. And they have this old school speaker call box. So I go up there with my sales pitch and it was terrible. So they said, no, you can't get in here. So I keep running. And I pull up my phone because I'm listening to music. I go, I bet I've networked before I need the network. I bet I've posted it forward. Sure enough, first connection, LinkedIn with director of communication. I'm like, oh yeah, that's right, Amy works here. So now I go back to the call box. They let me in. Turns out they have security there because Homeland Security is in the basement of this building. We call Amy, goes to voicemail. I'm like, oh man. There's another lady there that says, hey, she's on maternity leave for the next couple weeks. I'm like, great. So I leave a note for the security guard, awesome at security, terrible note passer. But Ryan is going up for a digital marketing position. Now keep in mind, this is the only place you can go sweating is the NCAA for a meeting. But Ryan's going up for a digital marketing position. During the course of his interview, they show a version of the video that I showed you. And Ryan goes, I know this sounds crazy, Josh, but Eric, I think the guy with the green glasses that made that video just showed me, I'm pretty sure he was just in the lobby. Next day, Josh calls me. Hey, this sounds weird, but were you in the lobby yesterday? And I go, I was in the lobby. And then we started a conversation. For 3 years, we have a deep partnership with the NCAA to help all of their Division II student athletes.
So that arc, you'll notice that there's a total moment of despair at two moments. Number one, when I get turned away at the security box, and then number two, when the note doesn't get passed. So that's the way you can do an arc of a story. And sometimes you can have a double arc, which I just did there. So that's the whole point of storytelling. People will lean in. They want to know what actually happens in that moment, because a lot of people have probably been in that situation, especially if you're in front of a sales group. They're always trying to produce sales. At first they're going, this is crazy that this guy went and did that, but I've done something like that in my career and I want to see how that pans out. So again, they're kind of in the boat with you. If they're salespeople, they go, I've had to do some crazy sales calls where I had to step into discomfort, just show up randomly and try to get that meeting. The other key with storytelling is context. So I purposely did not give you context before I told that story about going to the NCAA. The context for the audience is its example of the offline and the online coming together. So I'll usually tee that up before I actually tell that story. But most importantly, after you're done telling the story, remind the audience the context of that story. So, for example, when I get done telling the story about the NCAA, I say that's an example of the offline and the online coming together. It's the Jetsons and the Flintstones working together. I'm physically there at the NCAA, but then I used technology. When I couldn't get in, I pulled out technology and looked at LinkedIn to see who I was connected to in that building. And it was also an example of networking before I actually needed the network. That I networked ahead of time, so I actually had Amy as a first connection on LinkedIn, which opened doors metaphorically and, in this case, physically at the NCAA headquarters. All right, switching gears. That was about performing on stage, telling stories on stage. And you're always more interesting when you can give helpful tips within a story format. Then people are engaged. It's about entertaining, educating, and empowering. So now we're going to talk about how to write in story-like fashion when you're writing a business book. And to help me do this, I'm just going to give a couple examples from the current book that I'm currently writing and researching. So just like Paul Harvey and Mike Rowe, what you want to do often when you're writing a business book is let that person figure out the solution themselves. To say, oh, I know who he's talking about. So you don't overtly say, I'm talking about John F. Kennedy. You tell a story with some clues and let that person kind of be in on the joke with you and let them figure out who it is. Or maybe they never figure it out. And at the end, they go, oh, that's who that person is. So here's an example. The title of this section of the current rough draft of this book says Being Noble. In the late 1800s, a man in Sweden received an invaluable gift. This gift was courtesy of a grave error made by his town's local newspaper. The lucky man was able to do the impossible. He was able to read his obituary while he was still alive. There were two brothers, Ludwig and Alfred. When the eldest, Ludwig, passed away, the Swedish newspaper erroneously reported in its obituaries that it was the younger Alfred who had died. As you can imagine, Alfred was shocked to read of his own death. His shock turned to horror the more he read. The words used to describe him and his legacy were terrifying. At the time, Alfred was a very successful entrepreneur. His ingenious and popular invention had made him a very rich man. His invention? Dynamite. As such, the obituary headline read, Dynamite King Dies. It later went on to call him the Merchant of Death. Alfred was so dismayed about being tagged the Merchant of Death that he immediately set out to ensure this was not how he would ultimately be remembered. Not wasting time, Alfred drafted his last will and testament. In this 4-page document, he donated the majority of his vast fortune to a very specific and new charitable cause. When Alfred eventually did pass away, his obituary read positively different. By changing his focus for his life before it was too late, Alfred successfully changed his legacy and help to positively change the world. While many today may not immediately recognize his greatness, they certainly know the prizes he established and left behind. One of these prizes, the first Peace Prize, was awarded in 1901 to Henry Dunant, the founder of the Red Cross. You see, reading his erroneous obituary shocked Alfred into changing his life's focus. As a result, Alfred is not known today as the Merchant of Death, but rather as the man who established the prizes of chemistry, economics, literature, peace, physics, and medicine that carry his last name. The Nobel Prizes. Alfred Nobel learned the magical power of focusing on what matters most. Okay, so that's an example of a historical example of someone famous that you try to get the reader to guess who you're talking about before the end. And even if they don't guess it at the end, that's a nice surprise and delight, and also that they learn something very fascinating about someone that's quite famous. It also had the bonus of helping the reader discover why something is named something. For example, why do people say he was caught red-handed? That comes from way back in the day in the early years when you had livestock and someone would steal your livestock and they'd slaughter that livestock. And then the neighbor would come over and go, have you seen my pig? And they're sitting there with your hands with blood on them. You're caught red-handed. So that's one way to storytell. Another way to storytell when writing business books is to cover social science studies that are shocking. They're counterintuitive to what you would think would happen. And this is one such example on how we've written it for the upcoming book. We call this paradox of choice, jam. Jam. It all started with jam. One day, Mark and Sheena carefully placed 24 varieties of gourmet jam, forming a very large display in an upscale supermarket. Each customer that sampled the jam were given a dollar off coupon. Every few hours, Mark and Sheena adjusted the large display from 24 varieties of jam to only 6 options. What they found as that larger display of 24 jams received more attention, 60% in fact, than the display of only showcasing 6 jams. That's right, the large display got 60% more attention. However, what transpired from there is quite remarkable. While the large display garnered the most attention, and it also had by far the most choices, when it came to actual sales, it was outperformed by the table with less choices available. The results weren't even close. People were 10 times more likely to purchase from the table with fewer choices. It doesn't end there either. Increases in choice can often lead to increased dissatisfaction after you make a selection, most popularly known as buyer's remorse. Then we need to factor in that additional choices often cause us to waste additional time and effort researching the various choices, which can lead to unnecessary stress and anxiety. This jam study, as well as many others like it, has become known as choice overload or the paradox of choice. So again there, what we did is we set you up what you'd expect to happen. So we said that the 24 jams received 60% more attention. So you go, yep, that's what I thought. And then you pull the rug. That's when you say, but guess what? They sold 10 times less than the table that had only 6 jams. So it's counterintuitive the way we'd think, because you think about the 24, it has those 6 jams in the 24, plus all these other amazing gourmet jams. And then you remove it down just to those 6 jams. It's the paradox of choice. Our brain wants things to be simple. So anyways, speaking of simple, that's when it comes to storytelling. Try to be as simple as possible. Have fun with your storytelling. I hope you found this helpful. Feel free to keep sending us in your questions. And remember, keep listening to the Super You podcast, because we're all about unlocking and unleashing your inner superpower. Thank you for listening to today's Super You podcast. I'm your host, Eric Qualman. Most of you know me as Equal Man. And until next time, remember, it's not what we take from the world, it's what we leave behind.
7.
6.
5.
4.
3.
2.
1.
Super, 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 super.
Super You.